Welcome to Motivated to Lead Podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Klingsheim. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with CMO Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. This week, we're happy to have with us Dave Hemick. He is the CEO of Nonin Medical, a growing global company that is in the med tech world. Dave has just some great background as a leader for 30 years, and he's worked in technology companies, large med tech companies, and he has some great lessons he's going to share around leadership and being a servant leader, and looking forward to today's conversation with Dave. Well, I guess first off, Dave, can you give us just a little bit of your background, a little bit of your career story?
Sure. So I'm 31 years now in a professional role in the business world, and I think about 28 of those actually in medical technologies, mostly devices and software and what have you. So kind of an interesting career path. It's cut across clinical settings from gastroenterology to cardiology, electrophysiology. So a lot of different stops in between, but really, strong focus on med tech, and really have had a terrific career so far in this space. Love it. You know, it's the passion of getting up and working for patients every single day, which has been fantastic. And in that time, I've lived in Boston, Salt Lake City, Boston twice, actually, Chicago, California, and Minneapolis. So a lot of places along that journey, if you will.
Great. Well, tell me a little bit about your current role in the company that you're CEO of.
Sure. So I'm currently the CEO of Nonin Medical. So Nonin Medical is a privately owned, family-owned business here in the Twin Cities that's been around since 1986. So quite a story. You know, you don't find a lot of companies of our size that are still private and still, you know, very profitable and, you know, is a going business, has been able to impact what we do, which is in pulse oximetry, looking at oxygen saturations, which I'm sure a lot of people have heard of with COVID. You know, pulse oximeters have been moved to the very front of diagnostics, both in the home and also within a stronger clinical setting. But pulse oximetry was developed many, many years ago. And then our founder, Philip Isaacson, actually created the first fingertip pulse oximeter. So if you've ever had a fingertip, you know, that clip that goes on your finger at the doctor's office, that was developed by us. And so today, we're in over 140 countries on a global basis and have a strong and, you know, very, very strong following of physicians and caregivers around the world. So pretty amazing business. We have about 220 people roughly in the business, and everything's manufactured right here in Plymouth, Minnesota.
Okay. Well, I like to ask this question of almost every guest that we have on, knowing what you know now, if you could spin back time and talk to a 22-year-old Dave, what advice would you give him?
It's always an interesting question. You know, I think that the key is, you know, be purposeful in your career. You know, I think a lot of people come out and are racing through their careers. I think we've seen a lot of that change, especially over the last 5 to 7 years. Take the time to be purposeful and live in the present. I think it's important that you do get those skill sets. You go through peaks and valleys. You have a broader set of experiences versus just a title or a short stop. I describe it as that red craftsman tool chest that you know, many of us have in our garages, that's kind of your career. And along the way, you're putting tools into that tool chest. And if you don't take the time to put the right tools in or have that experience, you're not going to have that tool potentially later on in your career. And I've seen that it happen with a lot of people that are just so quick and just trying to move forward fast, but don't recognize and don't appreciate that journey, that experience set that they're picking up along the way, because undoubtedly they'll have that need at some other point in time in their career. So I think you have to be purposeful, and I think you have to be patient. And sometimes that's hard for people, but I do think it pays dividends, especially as you get into higher levels of the business.
So I asked the flip question. Is there any advice that you received that you would ignore now that you would say to somebody that's starting out that, you know, avoid this pitfall?
Probably a lot, but I think there's one that really rises to the top for me. I worked many years ago for a company, and, you know, some of the guidance was hire a team a lot like yourself, you know, just so that you have high team camaraderie, you have high synergies, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, friction or what have you. And that worked for a period of time, but it doesn't sustain, I think, in the long term. And I think you really have to be purposeful in hiring people that are not like you. You have to bring people in that have different thoughts. You have to bring in people with different backgrounds. And if that means even getting into different industries, that you're bringing people in that, that are really thinking very differently and challenge the way I may think as a leader, and they look at you know, an approach that that is different. I think that's probably the biggest thing, is never to hire a team that is just too highly synergistic. I think you do need, I call it healthy friction. I think healthy friction in businesses, healthy friction in teams is extremely important, because it does create a different way of looking at a problem or an opportunity. And that served me very well. It's tough to keep teams together that are just very, very like-minded and exactly like you as a leader. I mean, there's always issues that pop up with that. And I think that was advice that I would probably not move forward with again and learn more of that.
So think back this past year. I think there's been so many lessons learned by people, because they've been in an uncharted territory as we've kind of had to navigate uncharted waters. What are some things that you've learned in the last year?
Well, we talk about courage and agility a lot in Nonin. And I think this last year, agility has been one of those words that we've had to not only just really adopt, but have to practice on a daily basis. When COVID hit for us, it completely changed our world. Our business grew at levels we've never seen before, and taxed the organization and taxed supply chains. And it really created a really unique environment. There's no book written on how to manage through that. So you have to be agile. You really have to be engaging with people a lot, and you have to be willing to throw away the playbook. Our strat plan got shut down. We didn't follow that for a year because we couldn't. We were sure, surviving. And I think you have to be courageous to do that. And, you know, that's hard, you know, because you're not wired that way as a leader. You're wired to develop a plan, follow the plan, execute, make subtle changes and course corrections along the way. But we were making sweeping changes and sweeping decisions that we didn't have accurate information, and we just had to go with our gut. So I think that was the key thing, is, you know, agility through people was a critical piece for us this year.
So somebody that's starting out, we have a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are kind of early in their career as leaders. They maybe have taken over their first leadership position. Is there anything that you wish you would have known taking over that first team? You talked a little bit about some of your philosophy, not hiring people just like you, but talk a little bit about that.
I think you have to step back and realize you can't nor shouldn't be the expert being a leader. You have to be willing to be vulnerable. You have to be willing to walk into a team meeting and not having the answers. And you have to leverage your team. And in many cases, you're a student as much as you are a leader. And that's part of that process of availing yourself to the team, building that trust, because you don't have an answer, but getting to a collective answer by leading the group down that road. For me, when I first took my first job, I felt like I had to know everything. I had to be the expert in the room, and I really had to be that person that was out in front of the team. And I spent a lot of time focusing on that and not as much time focusing on what the team needed and how we needed to come together. So I think you have to be vulnerable. I think you have to be humble. Like I said, you have to avail yourself to the team and allow the team to guide how that team interaction should work, and trust the team's going to work in the right direction. And that was a big change for me when I first started. Now I step back. I create the guardrails and let the team work in between that. And I think that works pretty well.
So talk a little bit. I know we talked a couple weeks ago and talked about potential topics, and one of them was on a topic that I know that you're passionate about, in servant leadership, and just some of your philosophy around that. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think, especially in medical devices, you have to serve the patient. I mean, that starts with where the product is going in the end. You have to serve them. You have to think about that daily. So what are we doing today to serve that patient and serve the caregivers that are using our technology to provide care and diagnostics? And then you start working back to the team. But I think that's a critical guiding point, that if you are somebody who serves, whether it's in your community or your church or, you know, organizations that you're with, that has to be a part of how you show up, especially in our business. And I'm quite passionate about that. I, you know, I look back over my career and I look at the opportunities I've had to support people or support opportunities and support initiatives that maybe I didn't agree with, but I had to serve my team and support that. And that plays a big part of how I think about my leadership career and my leadership role. But I love that notion of being a servant. You know, it really, I think, helps guide me with how I show up to work. And I talked about that notion of being humble and availing yourself. And that all ties back into that notion of servant leadership for me and how I think about that. So I really do love it, you know, and I try to live it every single day. Some days it's hard not to, and sometimes sure. You have to be different. But, you know, at the end of the day, you still have to serve.
So you have what you refer to as it's GUD. And yeah. I know you're kind of putting that in place in your leadership. Talk about what that is and just share some of your thoughts around that.
So I use GUD, good leadership, is a way of bringing in different concepts. It's not the objective side of management or you're not following a process, but good stands for grace, understanding, and delight. And I think as a leader, you have to use grace, understanding, and delight on a regular basis with your team. You have to bring grace into a leadership role. It's a team, you know, it's a family. I mean, you spend more time with that group of people often than you do in your own family at home. But using that notion of grace, especially over this last year, there's a lot of pressures, a lot of external pressures, things that are going on in the business that are very different, or you're seeing behaviors that are unique. May have nothing to do with the business, but everything to do with what's going on at home. And you have to extend grace at times when maybe we haven't done that as much. Understanding is a critical part of that. You have to go deeper into the individual, understand their world, what they're going through, and making sure that you take the time to really learn about what's going on in their world. And that can be both business, it can be personal. I think that's important. And I always enjoy knowing my team, not so much about their business capabilities, but who they are as people. I mean, that's a wonderful journey I've been on with my leadership team. And I can't remember the business stuff, but I remember a lot about their families, their job, or not their jobs, but their personal lives and interests. And that's the thing I really remember, you know, with past members. And lastly, it's delight. You know, we have to show up every single day and trying to delight employees, especially now. You know, and I think that's one of the great lessons I've learned through COVID is that with all the pressures that we had and all the craziness going on, and it's still going on, so for us it hasn't stopped, you have to try to delight people. You have to try to surprise them, or you have to create, you know, space for them to be safe or to let pressure off or have fun and do different things. And I think by trying to delight people in their jobs, it just makes it a better working environment, especially when you're under points of pressure like we have in this year. I don't think those are going to change for me. So, you know, I look at good leadership, grace, understanding, and delight as a part of how I've changed as a leader this past year, and I'm looking at things differently. And it's worked, I think. You know, I mean, we've gotten through this so far, so knock on wood that continues. But it's been kind of an interesting philosophy that's emerged this year for me.
So you took over as far as a CEO, and I'm sure that first time everybody I've talked to that has stepped into that first leadership role as the leader for the organization, say there's always an adjustment working with a board that sometimes people maybe have volunteered on boards or maybe served on boards. But talk a little bit about your work with boards and just some of your thoughts around that. And what advice would you give somebody that's kind of in that first leadership role that they're the one responsible?
Mark, I think most importantly, boards are there to serve. So if you go back to that notion of servant leadership, boards are there to serve management. You know, they're there to serve shareholders and stakeholders. But you look at the different facets of their roles, they are there to serve. I think it's really important to engage with them. They're there as experts. That's why they're there. And that's why you build a board with very different experiences and capabilities to tap into. Speaking to them regularly, you know, really getting to know them, understand their experiences, asking for advice and guidance. Again, saying, you know, I have no idea what I'm dealing with in this situation. What do you think? Or can I pick your brain on this, you know, this situation? those kind of relationships are really, really important to build very early on. I think sometimes boards can be seen, or you hear a lot about that in certain, you know, areas that they can be contentious, or, you know, CEOs are under pressure from boards, and you hear that. We don't talk about all the great things that boards are doing for CEOs and for leaders, and that's helping to guide us. You know, we're very, you know, imperfect leaders, and we need mentors, and we need people to guide us, and that's what the board's there for. So getting engaged with them often and making sure that they understand you as a leader and you as a person, and they understand the business, of course. And I think one of the greatest pieces of advice I've ever heard from a board member is, please don't surprise me. You know, I can, you know, deal with bad news. Bad news is actionable. Sure. Good news is a pat on the back. And I think that's critical when you're dealing with board. You got to build trust.
So it's important for a leader to continue to grow and develop. Are there any books that you often recommend to other leaders?
There's a whole library that I have from behind sure. me in my office, but there's three that I pulled, you know, that I've looked at recently that I really enjoy. One is a book, and I actually have them right here, by Bob Thomas, about Walt Disney, actually, looking at the original American story of Walt Disney. And just the risk that he took, calculated risk, but he had a passion. And, you know, his story is often seen just kind of on the commercial front, but you really go back to how he built that company and how he was able to look beyond just what he had in front of him. And he didn't let barriers get in the way, which I think is a wonderful story. I mean, it really talks about conviction and passion and a lot of risk taking. But that's a terrific book. I just finished Matthew McConaughey's new book called Green Lights, which is kind of a new one. You know, it's a very interesting book. It's not a very typical business-oriented book or life-oriented book. It cuts across. But again, if you look at the red thread kind of in his world, I mean, he looked at things differently, continues to do that differently, and not afraid to be an individual. He is his own person. He has his own beliefs. And I think there's a lot to learn from that book, and just thinking about his life and how he pursued things, it was quite interesting. And the last one is a book called Mentored by the King, regarding Arnold Palmer. And that's just a fantastic book. I mean, Arnold Palmer is one of those great individuals, but as much as he was a great athlete, I mean, who he is and was as a person is really even more incredible. So just the little things count. So those are three that I just like to talk about, and, you know,
yeah. Well, I love it. Those are three that I don't think we've had anybody mention yet. So that, which is pretty tough. This is like episode 94. So that's a good job. So, you know, and we live in a world that's connected, and we're living on Zoom and having, you know, these meetings, virtual meetings. And we've learned to kind of harness technology. Are you more of an analog guy or a digital guy?
Well, I'm a digital guy. I mean, that's our platform in MedTech and what we do. Right. So very much so. I've really glommed on to, you know, using iPads and using OneNote. You know, for me, I take a lot of notes. I build and use a lot of folders in there, but it's a great tool for me. I can take my iPad only when I travel, and I've got access to everything. But I think the OneNote part of it is really great for me, because I can bring in, you know, snippets from here, or bring in PowerPoint presentations and embed them into my note-taking, which allows me to be a very present leader. When I show up to meetings, I can prepare. I can go back and look at previous conversations and come into the meeting and reflect. That's been great. I mean, it really has. And I love that platform. So I try to build some time in between meetings. I'm not always very successful with it. But even if you have 10 or 15 minutes, you can go back, look at a previous conversation, review notes and comments, and then show back up into that meeting, especially when you have one-on-ones with your team and you're very present, you're very engaged, and again, serving them. So I think that's a really cool tool. And of course, Microsoft Teams has been probably one of the saving graces for us this year, and has changed the way we will forever do business. So those two platforms for me are really important.
So after we're completely done with COVID, whenever that is, is there anything that you're not going to change as far as, of, you know, things that you've adapted to that you're going to continue?
Yeah, I think being flexible as far as our work days and our workforce. I mean, we've proven that we have been able to create a lot of success this year, and it hasn't come in, of course, a traditional format. I don't I think we're going to change that. I mean, we're going to provide flexibility and see how it works. And we've done that. And I can see that as we get past COVID, it's going to bring a greater quality of life for people. They're going to be engaged with their families. They can be engaged with their business. And maybe at different times, of course, you have the rules and some guideposts for that. But I don't see us going back to a traditional setting again. I think this has proven that people can balance work and life in a different way.
So outside of work, what are some things that you do to kind of recharge?
Well, I'm kind of an adrenaline junkie, so I love to boat, love to jet ski, I love doing that. I'm a golfer, and most importantly, spending time with my family. My family and I spend a lot of time boating and golfing and doing those kinds of things. So that's where you're going to find us. We're out on the lake. If you're in Minnetonka, we spend a lot of time on the lake.
Great. So any parting advice that you would give to a new or up-and-coming leader?
Well, you know, I go back to grace, understanding, and delight. I think that there are subjective attributes to leaders that are just as important to following a process or following a type of leadership or following a business work or what have you. I think you have to really be even more in tune to yourself as a person, and you know, your true integrity and your true values are so important. And I really see a shift in leadership where that true authentic person standing in front of a team and being humble and, you know, being emotional and avail yourself. I've used those words a few times. I think that's incredibly, incredibly important. It's not just about posting the results. You know, that's always going to be the easy measurement, but the how you posted them and the journey to get there is becoming more and more and more important. And I think we need to do that. And we've got to do that through having strong diversity and equity and inclusion in our lives. You know, that's something that we need to surround ourselves with, a team of people and a company that reflect our markets and reflect our consumer base. And listening differently are really, really important. So those subjective pieces, I think, are critically, critically important. So that's the advice I would give. You know, great. Take time to think about who you want to be as a person, both in your home and in your business, and try to be the same person as best you can in both of those environments. And do that would be probably the best advice I could give for that.
Well, Dave, it's been a lot of fun to talk to you today, and definitely appreciate all your thoughts. And I think this is definitely going to be helpful to those that are listening. And how would somebody learn more about your company and what you're doing?
Well, we would love to have everybody visit us on nonin.com, and our LinkedIn and Facebook pages share a lot about what we're doing on a very regular basis. We really leverage social media to share our story. So we'd love to have people join us there and share their comments and thoughts as always.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.